From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 18th day of February 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA says cuts to crop insurance won't be as deep as first suggested. A state-run bank in Russia is investing big money into the poultry industry. And wholesale inventories of potash are on the decline. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And at the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll explore the hypoxia zone and some reasons why its size is not a very good indicator of water quality in either the Gulf of Mexico or the Mississippi River Valley. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. The March contract in the wheat down 9 3/4 at $4.85. The May futures at $4.99.5, down 9 3/4. In July at $5.12.25, down 9 3/4. In Kansas City, the March at $4.93.5, 8.5 lower. The July at $5.15.25, or the harvest month, down 9 cents for the hard red. March corn futures in Chicago at $3.57.25, 2 3/4 lower. The May at $3.69, down 2 3/4. In July, $3.79.75, down 2 3/4. September at $3.88.25, down 1 3/4. December corn at $3.95.25, down 1 1/2 cents. March soybean futures 9.48, 3.5 lower. The May at 9.57.5, down 3.5. July at 9.65.25, 3.5 lower. And the August soybeans at 9.61.5, down 3.25. November contract in the bean pit at 9.31.25, down 0.5 cent on the afternoon. Bean meal March contract at 275.60, down 3.80. The March bean oil at 38.70, down 5 cents. February live cattle at 92.17.5, $1.35 higher. March feeders at 102.47.5, up 90 cents. And the lean hog futures finished the April contract today at $70.27.5 a hundredweight. That's $1.07.5 higher on the day. You are listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, March contract, $79.02 a barrel, up $1.69. March ethanol at $1.70 2/10, down 4 cents. The natural gas at $5.17 9/10. They're 20 7/10 lower. And the RBOB at $2.06 9/10, up 6 2/10. March heating oil at $2.05 1/10, that's 4 4/10 higher. And the gold futures at $1,118 even on the settlement price, down $1.50 on the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 10,383, just about 75 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 80.39 is up 0.01 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like as provided by our own Mike Sola. Mr. Sola says this afternoon in northern and central Indiana should be mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 30 in far northwestern Illinois to 42 in the extreme south. Tonight in northern and east central Indiana, mostly cloudy in west central and southern Illinois. Increasing cloudiness. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows this evening from 5 in far northwestern Illinois to 25 in the extreme south. Tomorrow in west central Illinois, cloudy. Light snow arriving. In southwestern Illinois, cloudy, snow and rain arriving. In northeastern Illinois and northern and eastern Indiana, mostly sunny skies. Elsewhere, increasing cloudiness. Highs tomorrow from 27 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 44 in the extreme south. Light snow will fall across much of Illinois, Indiana Friday night into Saturday morning. Most of the snowfall will be around an inch, says Mr. Sola, but a few places could get just a bit more. Another system will quickly follow with more snow on Sunday into Monday. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and talk to Pete Levitt.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On a Thursday afternoon, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
How are you today?
Oh, getting along pretty good.
Tell me about what you saw in the marketplace, and then maybe, I don't know whether you've seen some of the USDA numbers that were released this afternoon by Joe Glauber, but maybe we can talk those up just a bit if we can do that as well.
Well, I've been I'm out on the road, so I missed any numbers that came out this afternoon. I do think I caught a glimpse of what their planting intentions were. I think they were, what, at 89-something on the corn and kind of unchanged on the beans?
Yeah, that's right. Farmers will plant this year 89 million acres of corn, up from the 88 that they had previously thought about, along with 77 million acres of soybeans, and that's up from the 76.5.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what the trade has been looking at, actually. Might be a smudging on the low side. I think for my individual supply-demand table that I've been using at Outlook meetings, I've been using something around 89.5 and about 77.5 or so on soybeans. So, you know, it's anybody's guess at this point until USA comes out with a surveyed number, which, you know, it's not too long. They'll be out in the field with that survey to try to get a little better barometer on which way farmers are leaning. Visiting around, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we see a smudging more beans in some areas. I think a lot of guys are wanting to mix it up a little bit. Maybe they've been in continuous corn a little too long and they'd like to bring some beans back. I think a lot of guys, after last year's struggle with getting the crop planted and then getting the crop harvested, are behind on their tillage work or pre-planting tillage work. And I think some might lean a little bit to beans to give them a little breathing room as we go into planting. But it will be a number that the trade's going to watch.
Well, do you think it's a bright idea to go to more beans?
Well, I don't know. I think if you run the numbers, and remember, I'm a desk farmer, so I don't know.
Me too.
When you get right out into it, I'm totally amazed when I go to these implement shows, just like last week down at the Farm Machinery Show, of the technology and the equipment that farmers deal with today. So I'm not convinced, you know, that I'm really an expert on the numbers, but I think for the most part, corn yields have been more consistently on the higher side, and probably looking at the corn-soybean ratio, you know, I think probably the market probably favors corn, and I think that's why the trade is kind of thinking that we would see a pickup of corn acres.
You know, some interesting things as we look at the bean market. Do you think that the China will continue to purchase? We're not very, I mean, we're a long way, relatively speaking, into the marketing year, but we're a very long way into what the predictions look like. And we don't have to actually export a lot of soybeans on a weekly basis to get to the final projection from USDA.
No, really, I think all we need to do is sell about 5 million bushels a week from here on out till September 1st to meet USDA's 1.4 billion bushel bean export number. From what I see, I think USDA could probably raise that a little bit. I think they may be still 50 million too high on that. But you could just look at the sales pace over the past 2 to 3 weeks, and you can see that the South American influence is beginning to take hold. And we've seen a fall off over the last 2 to 3 weeks. And my guess here is tomorrow morning's number is going to be awfully small. I think it could be around 300,000 or 350,000 tons. So we're talking about a 10 million bushel number type, and it won't be long once that South American crop starts coming on that I think our bean sales will fall down to 5 million or less a week. The first part of the harvest has been basically to fill up the pipeline. They had a big vacuum, no beans in that pipeline, so they've used that now to fill up the pipeline. And I think as you look toward March now, last week of February, first part of March, you're going to begin to see those South American soybeans enter the world market, and I think our export sales pace is going to suffer from that.
Are the indications that you hear there at ADM that the bean crop is as good as predicted?
Well, all of the signs that I hear that is there. Now, naturally, the market always has a tendency to overdo everything, whether it's overdue a big crop or overdue a short crop. The market just continues to kind of run with it until it finally hits a brick wall. It may not be quite as big as maybe the trade is working, but from all indications that I hear out of South America, the it's going to be a good one. It's not 100% made yet. You got to keep in mind the last 2-3 years, Argentina, you know, that last 30 days of the growing season really took the production potential out of Argentina. That doesn't look to be the case this year, but it's getting closer and closer to becoming a sealed deal.
And finally, as we close out our time with you, are you feeling more friendly to the marketplace, corn and soybeans, today than you did a week or 2 weeks ago?
Well, it's a struggle. I mean, the South Americans have a lot of bean inventory to push into the export market. The North American farmer has a lot of corn to move into the North American market. And it's going to be a struggle for these markets to try to rally. But, you know, we did have a nice little bounce up here during the first part of the month. Now the last couple of days we're kind of giving some of that back, which is natural. The key here, I think, from a technical perspective, is that the brakes can be put on this correction that we've had the last couple of days by Monday, if not sooner, and then kind of regroup and then try to go one more run to the upside. Probably the thing that worries me the most is the chart formation of the dollar. It's looking like it's wanting to kind of jump through this $80 mark and make a quick run to 83, 84. If that's the case, that's going to exert a pretty good headwind against any kind of rally in corn and soybeans, but that's not a sure deal either. But I'm probably more concerned with dollar strength putting the dampers on a late winter, early spring rally than anything at this point.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
The 20th annual All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting is March 9th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And we have a dynamite lineup, including Sue Martin, Steve Freed, Chip Flory, Glenn Ring, Joe Persaki, John Bondurant, and Ed Kieser. The cost is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. Register now at 800-528-7980 and avoid the long registration line. We take all major credit cards. Call 800-528-7980 and we'll mail you your tickets ahead of the event.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
USDA now says that potential cuts to the crop insurance industry would be about 20% less than originally proposed, but agent commissions would be capped under a new draft of the standard reinsurance agreement between USDA and the crop insurance industry. The White House's proposed budget details $8 billion in crop insurance savings over 10 years. Officials said Thursday that the actual projection was closer to $8.4 billion. Russia's top meat firm today says that a state-run bank will invest $83 million to fund its project to boost poultry output as Moscow is seeking to show Washington it can boost its own output and survive without imports from the United States. Russia and the U.S. are soon expected to begin a second round of talks to resolve a spat over U.S. poultry supplies. Russia suspended imports on January 19th and has taken a hard line with Washington, accusing it of flouting food safety laws. North American potash inventories at the manufacturer level fell sharply in January as dealers restocked supplies of the crop nutrient ahead of the spring planting season and overseas sales gained momentum. Potash Corporation of Saskatchewan says that inventories fell by over 550,000 metric tons to roughly 2.5 million metric tons, the lowest level since December of 2008. Inventories of potash are now only 6% above the prior five-year average. Officials at the National Association of Convenience Stores say they will not be pumping E15 anytime soon, or at least until they get answers to several pressing questions. Gas station owners are worried about liability issues that could come from selling E15. The fuel distributors also are concerned they will be unable to handle higher ethanol blends for a number of reasons. The United Nations Food Agency today says that food prices are likely to rise again on resumed demand for agricultural commodities for food and energy and higher input costs due to rising oil prices. FAO says that agricultural output is expected to rise 12% in industrialized countries in the next 10 years compared to the year 2000. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you'll find most of our daily agricultural programming in its entirety, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report. You can listen to it off of the website or sign up to have it delivered to your computer automatically as a podcast. And if you can't get us on a radio station or hear us on the web, well, how about dialing this number? It's 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's just an answering service, but we post some numbers there and a bit of our analysis at about 10:15 and 3:15 daily. The mobile analyst portal at 217-333-3434.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Up next, the hypoxia zone in the Gulf of Mexico has been blamed on pollutants from Middle America. But the size of the zone, as you'll hear, changes constantly and is a pretty poor indicator of the nutrient load from the Mississippi Valley. The hypoxia zone at the mouth of the Mississippi River changes in size hour by hour, says George Zappar. He's an extension water quality specialist at the University of Illinois and has been on the meeting circuit this winter talking to farmers and fertilizer dealers about the plant nutrients they apply. A fertilizer runoff from farm fields and golf courses and lawns in the Mississippi and the Ohio River Valley Basin are blamed for the size of the zone. Yet Zapar says the size of the zone changes so often that it's not really a good measurement of fertilizer management.
If we have a hurricane, for example, we'll go through and mix up the zone of hypoxia and basically aerate that water, and it goes away, even though the culprit, the cause of that, may still be there. And it's just a really difficult way to measure if we're seeing improvements or changes in water quality, because it is such a grab sample, basically, of a very dynamic number.
The size of the zone in square miles is a very easy number for people to understand. Is it bigger or smaller? And then correspondingly, who is to praise or to blame? The problem is that number changes too often to be relevant.
For example, this last year when they measured the zone hypoxia, it was a lot smaller than they had expected. It was off by about 5,000 square miles, and that was the same team that had predicted the zone hypoxia just a month earlier. And so it just gives you some idea of just how variable this number is, and I think we're probably better served to look at more local water quality impacts and look at changes in terms of best management practices, reductions in loading to streams and rivers, because I think we can monitor those a little bit more closely, and certainly we can have more confidence that they're reflecting what's going on.
What has been happening, as indicated by a U.S. EPA Science Advisory Board, says Zapar, is that farmers have been doing a pretty good job of not over-applying nutrients. There are still things that need to be done to make those nutrients stay put all of the time, but their cost generally keeps producers from over-applying. Well, the Science Advisory Board recommended the following management options in 2007. The promotion of perennial crops for biofuels. Variable rate application of fertilizers or some other in-field efficiencies. Wetland construction. Tighter nitrogen and phosphorus limits on municipal and private industrial point sources, not farms, and the construction of targeted conservation buffers. In the end, promoting local water quality improves the flow downstream. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming and the calendar of events. If you'd like to go see one of our ag panels out and about in the state of Illinois or Indiana, please do visit willag.org, and you can find that calendar of events and listen to the Closing Market Report, the Pre-Opening Market Report, the daily podcast of all sorts. It's all at willag.org and a service of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The 20th annual All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting is March 9th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And we have a dynamite lineup, including Sue Martin, Steve Freed, Chip Flory, Glenn Ring, Joe Persaki, John Bondurant, and Ed Kieser. The cost is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. Register now at 800-528-7980 and avoid the long registration line. We take all major credit cards. Call 800-528-7980. And we'll mail you your tickets ahead of the event.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. State universities are pushing Governor Pat Quinn and the General Assembly to start working on Illinois' budget crisis before it does them permanent damage. The University of Illinois is appealing to its graduates to write to lawmakers. That follows a letter university president sent to Quinn last week urging him to act. State government is struggling with a $13 billion budget deficit. Universities and other government-dependent institutions are waiting on overdue state payments. The U of I alone is owed $475.5 million. Interim President Stanley Eikenberry says he and others plan to lobby in Springfield in the coming weeks. The state Senate is considering a measure allowing schools to borrow to meet short-term needs. Last fall's police shooting death of Kawan Carrington was declared an accident today by a Champaign County coroner's jury, but the sister and legal guardian of the teen says this decision brings her no closer to closure, saying she expected the ruling. Kenesha Williams also says there are conflicting stories of what occurred October 9th when Carrington was shot and killed after police in Champaign responded to a report of a break-in. A multi-agency task force led by state police determined that Officer Daniel Norbitz would not face criminal charges, but County Coroner Dwayne Northrup says he would have hoped today's ruling by a randomly chosen jury would have helped bring closure to Carrington's family. The same coroner's jury today ruled the November death of Holly Cassano as a homicide, but a Champaign County sheriff's investigator says authorities don't have any strong suspects yet in the still unsolved murder of the Muhammad woman. Coroner Dwayne Northrup says the woman had been stabbed more than 60 times when found in her home by a family member on the morning of November 2nd. Much is still being withheld because of an ongoing investigation, but investigator David Sherrick says he believes the attacker was injured, but it's not clear whether Cassano knew her attacker. Republican legislative leaders want some big changes to the way Illinois draws political districts. They want an independent commission to draw new districts for state lawmakers and members of Congress instead of leaving the job to the Illinois legislature. The current system is set up so that if Democrats and Republicans deadlock over a new political map, the winner is chosen by random choice, then that party gets to draw districts however it wants. I'm Jeff Bonsert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt is here today. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Sunny skies here at the moment, but I'm told there might be more snow in the forecast. What can you see?
Yes, there is. There's another, actually a pair of systems coming by this weekend. We have something coming through tomorrow night. It's a weak system because it's going to give way to a stronger one that's following it. However, the good news for northern Illinois is that the storm should track pretty much across the southern half of the state, really the storm center down around southeast Missouri and across western Kentucky. So that means we're going to see some pretty significant precipitation in the south. Up north, I think the amounts will be fairly much on the lighter side. That's at least for the Friday system. I don't think, as I said, it's worth very much. But the one that follows will have heavier precipitation with it. And again, I think most of that is going to be on the south. We will see, maybe two to five inch amounts up in north central areas and maybe just barely making it all its way up to Lake Michigan.
Now, the chatter among most in the Midwest is that there's so much snow on the ground across much of the corn and soybean growing region that it will be a very late and possibly wet start to the growing season, which isn't very far away. And it's the third Thursday. I suppose that the National Weather Service has some idea of what it thinks might happen. What did they release today?
Well, they came out with their forecast for March, which has precipitation above normal across the southern half of the U.S., most of the southern half, except for the central Mississippi Valley. Then they have below normal precipitation from an area from Illinois east through Ohio and including lower Michigan. And below normal precipitation there with equal chances when you get farther west. If that were to verify, that would be a bit of a help. The temperature forecasts are for temperatures to continue below normal across the southern half of the eastern two-thirds of the country. To make sense of that, that is from about the Rockies to the Atlantic coast and from about central Illinois southward to the Gulf of Mexico. Those areas below normal. Above normal temperature, a little slice of Lake Superior and the adjacent land areas and in the Pacific Northwest. Now, they have that same forecast essentially for the entire spring. March, April, and May. I guess they just decided to take what they had put together for March and ran it into May. And using as a principal guidance the El Nino pattern, I think they're a little optimistic on making it warm in the north. I think this is, we're going to see one of the colder Februaries in a long time across most of the United States. The lower 48 is probably going to average well below normal for the month of February following a cold January. So this winter has certainly been a cold one and for much of the country, and I think some of that's going to persist into spring.
Pete, we appreciate you being with us today.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Leonard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.